Good afternoon, everybody. And welcome to Denver, where you're having San Diego weather today. Now, when people hear that I'm from the city of San Diego, they give a sigh. San Diego, that's one of the most beautiful places in the world. And they're right. It's beautiful for tourists. We got the beaches, we got the 70-degree weather, and we got the sunshine. But when you work for the city of San Diego, the government, think Detroit, think Chicago, think New York with 70-degree weather. That is the city of San Diego. Now, when I started at the city many, many years ago, I started as an admin trainee in the water department. My job was an intern, and my first role was to wear the brand new costume they had bought, which was the mascot for the water department, Drippy. I was a huge water drop walking through the concourse handing out water conservation materials. From there, my illustrious career took me through 10 other departments and landed me finally in purchasing. I have to tell you, my last 5 years as purchasing agent were probably some of the toughest years I've spent working in that city. During my tenure, we changed into a strong mayoral form of government. What that means is there's no more city manager. You report to the mayor's office. He or she's now your boss. We also had first-time centralization of all purchasing and contracting, as was mentioned. Then the Witch Creek fires broke out. Covering 200 miles and 2,000 homes were burned across the city and counties of San Diego. And then I had a little other emergency called the Mount Soledad landslide. It's a really expensive property. If you've ever heard of La Jolla, California, where movie stars and rich people live, this is their rich neighbors. That whole hillside slid down the ground, 20 homes, a city park, and a 6-lane highway went with it. And as purchasing director, I now became the emergencies operations chief. So you may be thinking to yourself, I'm at a fleet conference. Why the heck did they bring in a purchasing agent to talk to us? I know what you feel about purchasing. I know what you call us behind closed doors. I even know what you sometimes say to our face. Because remember, I used to be you for 15 years. I was in the customer department, and I hated purchasing. They kept me from getting the stuff I wanted to get when I wanted to get it, and they would just frustrate the heck out of me. Well, then I became purchasing agent. And it opened up a whole new world for me. They have rules they gotta follow. It actually does take 6 months to bid and award a contract and purchasing with everything they've got to deal with. And then there's those customer departments. Remember, I used to be one? Now I'm dealing with them. You customers drive us crazy. And part of my mission today, in the short time we have together, is I want you to start thinking of purchasing as your friend. We are part of your team. But to help you do that, I'm going to kind of pull back the curtain a little bit, and I'm going to get you into the mind and the soul of a purchasing agent. I'm going to tell you what makes us tick and what ticks us off, so that when you're working with your purchasing team in the future, you'll have some real strategies, and it will be more of a team effort. So purchasing, what's the big deal about purchasing? They're just the middleman, right? Anybody can buy stuff. You guys know how, you gals know, you know how to buy stuff. You don't need me. Well, apparently, there's a lot of public procurement laws we're supposed to be following. It's not something that you as a customer department necessarily needs to know about, but we need to know about it. If you look at purchasing in any organization, everybody knows that financial management, they know what's budgeted. Auditors, they know what's been spent. Purchasing is right in the middle. At the end of the fiscal year, we know who has $50 and who has $50,000 because they're coming to spend it quickly before they lose it. We see everything. So if anything, purchasing sort of has... They know the heartbeat of the organization. They're right in the middle of everybody. Now, you have customer departments. You have police, fire, park and rec, public works. Those are all your customers. Well, they're our customers too, and we got you on top of that. Now, when you look at government purchasing in general, whenever they talk about the gross national product, normally they throw out a lot of dollars and numbers from the feds. But I have to tell you, local government's where the spending's at. Cumulatively, we together, the cities, the counties, the school districts, the agencies, we make up anywhere from 10 to 30% of the gross national product. Good years, we're probably on the higher end. Good years, we're on the lower end. Bad years, we're on the higher end because private enterprise isn't buying as much, but government always buys. So purchasing is a big deal in the organization. If you look at the number one expense of any government, it's personnel. It's us. It's our benefits, it's our salaries, it's everything that goes along with that. The second biggest is everything else, and that goes through purchasing. So HR sees half the house, purchasing sees the other half of the house. And out of that pie, you are the biggest part of the pie. Fleet, with your heavy equipment, with your aircraft, with your boats, with everything that you guys bring into the house, not you specifically, but that comes into the house, it's all with Fleet. So you would think you would be our number one customer, wouldn't you? You'd think we'd roll out the red carpet when you came to visit. We handle you with kid gloves. Everybody shaking their head. Nobody's gotten that treatment? Right, because you aggravate the heck out of us. And what I want to share with you is how to work the system. You know how your teenagers work you? I'm going to tell you the inside track. So before I get started, I need to know who my audience is. So I've got three categories I want to self-identify. The first category is if you work for a municipality in the Fleet area, do anything with Fleet, or you're a business or company that sells primarily to Fleet, will you raise your hand so I can get a sense of who's here? That's the majority. That's what I thought. All right, now, my purchasing folks, there may be a few of you here. This is category two. Anybody who's primarily from purchasing or finance, or they're a dedicated buyer that does mostly purchasing stuff, any of those folks here? Raise a hand, baby. You're purchasing. You're proud. Represent. And if you need protection, I'm a mother hen. Come behind me, babe. And now my third category. You're the person that just wandered in. You have no idea what this conference is about, but you think there's a free meal in here somewhere. There's always one. There you are, right there. All right, so purchasing. Let's get into it. And I'm going to explain a little bit about purchasing because it was new to me, too. Well, in the government environment in the last few years, and this affected both Fleet and purchasing, there were more entrepreneurial businesses, according to the Small Business Administration, started in the last 10 years than any other time in the last 100 years. Why? Because during the recession, a lot of older folks, baby boomers, were either laid off or they got dissatisfied with being an employee. So they decided, this is the time of my life that I'm going to start my own business. So there's more small businesses started in the last 10 years than the last 100. The second part of that was a lot more companies became interested in government. Where they never did government before, contractors, Fleet, all kind of landscaping, janitorial, you name it. Most of them didn't do government before, but because we were in the middle of a recession, and the only person who spends money in a recession is government, they started flocking toward government. So we got a lot of newbies to the table in the last few years. In any kind of recession or depression and governments cut back, they always save essential services. You know who they are. Police, fire, safety. We're not essential, are we? Fleet's not essential, and neither is purchasing. We get cut more than the essential departments. And so we have been reduced over the last few years. Another impact, and it was talked about earlier, there's a huge retiring workforce going out the door. They're taking their knowledge, their skills, and their pensions, and they're out of here. And that's going to create a vacuum. We're not able to refill those positions fast enough or get the kind of skill sets that are needed. And then I love this one. When the politicians get up there and they pass some kind of policy or social goal, who implements it? It's us. So, for instance, they want us to recycle more or purchase more recycled products. Well, we're the ones that suddenly have to figure that out and figure how we're going to do it and keep track to give reports. They want us to purchase green. They want you to buy local. And then they want you to save money. But what if buying local is more expensive? So do I save money or do I buy local? Which social goal do you want? And we're told to do it all. Deferred replacement, depreciation management, you know that more than anybody. Back in the good old days, you could keep a vehicle for so many years, so many miles, and then you traded it off and the new one came in because that was the cycle. Now it's keep it running till it drops. Till parts start falling off that are not essential, keep it running till it drops. And that's been what you've been having to do the last few years. And then emergencies are all over the place. Emergencies used to be predictable. We had hurricanes in Florida. We had earthquakes in California. And up the Midwest, they had their tornadoes or rainstorms. And everybody once in a while had a fire. But poor old Colorado, they're having something every other week. If it's not floods, it's fires. 2 weeks ago or a week ago, it was hail. The craziness. Whatever's happening with the environment, it's happening all over the country. And what happens in those emergencies is purchasing and fleet get suddenly pulled into emergency situations that you never fathomed having to handle before. And then finally, in our jobs, and this is something you private companies, you never have to deal with this. Everything we do is public information. Everything we do. From our cell phone records, all the way to notes from meetings, to the bid, the award, the evaluation, the protest, everything out there, it has to be transparent and open for public information. For my city, I am so proud of my city on occasion, because here's where we were known for our public information. Three mayors, great mayors, that I'm so proud to announce. The last one that just got fired was Filner. I don't know if you know Congressman Filner, turned into Mayor Filner. Kind of liked to sexually harass women while he headlocked them. Okay, now given the benefit of the doubt here, in any sexual harassment suit, you're going to have he said, she said. But when it's he said, she times 14, there's a problem there. The other thing that I heard Mr. Filner was doing from the purchasing director is that he was taking all the contracts that were coming up before city council to be awarded, and if he didn't like the company, he would just cross it off and wouldn't bring that contract for award. How do you run a city like that? Mayor number two, Mayor O'Connor. She was recently highlighted in the January issue of AARP. Okay, for those of you under the age of 30, AARP is the American Association of Retired Persons, okay? And when you're 50, there's a satellite in the sky that magically knows you turn 50, and in your mailbox is an application in a magazine. Am I right? You know who's over 50 now. They just nodded their heads. Mayor O'Connor was highlighted for gambling. Now, you're allowed to gamble. It was legal. She was going to the video poker at the nearby Indian casino. But Mayor O'Connor had married a very rich man, the founder of Jack in the Box. And he had passed away, and she squandered her millions going to the Indian casino. Again, you're allowed to squander your own money. The problem is, she dipped into some of the charitable foundations that her husband had set up and was $2 million into those before she was caught. Mayor number three, Time Magazine, at one point called San Diego Enron by the Sea because of our pension and budget issues. At that time, they came out with the top three worst mayors in the nation. Mayor Murphy made number two. And I was proud to be a City of San Diego employee. So when we are in those roles and jobs, and you've got people like that above you, and remember, now we're in a strong mayoral form of government, kind of trickles down on you a little bit. So when people ask you at a cocktail party, where do you work? Downtown. Oh, specifically where? Oh, I work in a bank building. Because at that time, banks weren't as bad as working for the city. So that's the world we live in for those of you in the private industry. Sometimes when your city or county or agency is going through shenanigans or their politicians are, we get tainted with the same thing. So let's get into it. What does a purchasing agent have to deal with? And I'm just trying to help you understand this animal that you need to know. Well, when they give us the job, this is what they tell us the job description is. We are responsible for all the purchasing and contracting for the organization. We will serve as the organization's representative, negotiate contracts, monitor budget integrity, and follow all public procurement laws. Easy peasy. Anybody can do that. Here's what they don't tell us. And when you knock on the door to the purchasing agent and they're looking a little miffed, it could be because any one of these things happened today. So number one, we are referees. We are supposed to be Switzerland. We are supposed to serve you, the customer department, and get you what you need when you need it. But we also represent the vendor. We have to make sure you're not taking advantage of them, not putting undue stress on them, and that they have a chance to correct any faults, if there is one, within the contract period. So my favorite call is when I get somebody on the phone saying, I want you to fire that vendor, and I want them out today, and I want a new vendor in here tomorrow. And it's always something easy, you know, like janitorial or landscaping or something like that, really easy to flip out. So my first question is, did you pull in the vendor and talk to them? Well, no, I'm not going to talk to them. They're screwing up. Fire them and get somebody else in here. Well, then purchasing has to pull you in, pull the vendor in, and get everybody sit down and give everybody a chance to correct. And then if they don't correct, then we go get a new vendor. Fleet, purchasing. As far as I'm concerned, there's fire, there's police, and fleet and purchasing are right in the middle. Because how do you think they have those fire engines without us? How do you think those cops have those guns, flak jackets, and police cars without us? Any emergency, we are involved in that emergency from the get-go, even before the emergency, because we're prepping for it. I love the who touched it last. This is when something, nobody knows what to do with it. So they normally give it to purchasing if it's small stuff, but if it's big stuff, well, fleet handles big stuff, so give it to fleet. And you get to handle weird stuff that you're like, how did this become a fleet responsibility? It happens to purchasing too. We're more alike than you know. Then problem solvers. One of the last problems I had to solve in the city of San Diego, I worked with John Alley from Fleet. And many of you know John from his many years at the city of San Diego. We had an incident and it was bad. It made the newspaper. There was a police dog and a sergeant who had come home after a double shift. And the sergeant accidentally left the dog in the back seat. There is a sad ending to this story for the animal lovers, so I'm going to go over it briefly. The sergeant went into the house and went to sleep, forgot the dog was in the back of the car. It was one of those unusual hot July days in San Diego, and the temps in the car, they estimated it got up to about 106 degrees. Well, the dog frantically tried to get out, completely demolished the inside of the police car trying to get out, and succumbed to the heat. Well, of course, the officer was devastated, and it made the news, and it was all over the nation, this news. When there involves a dog, there's going to be all over. So John calls me and says, we need to come up with a solution. Oh, by the way, they want it done in a week, whatever we decide. So John and I researched to find out different things that you could do so a dog would never be locked up. And we found this product, and you may have heard of it and know about it. It's called Chili Dogs. And chili dog is when the officer leaves the car and it's turned off and the dog's still in the back, the car will automatically turn on and I guess the air conditioner comes on. And so the dog, and then the sirens and everything. So it tells the officers, hey, come back to the car. But here's the problem we had to solve. There was two vendors. One was Chili Dogs, the one we chose. And one was another vendor. The car didn't turn on, but or whatever, and I'm not a mechanic, but the windows went down, so the dog could literally jump out of the car. But now I'm thinking, if the dog jumps out in a busy city park with a bunch of children running around, this is a police dog, a child might be bitten. Or what if they're on the side of the freeway? The dog jumps out right into I-15 traffic. So we went with Chili Dogs. What did John and I get for finding the solution? Another problem to solve. We didn't even get a thank you. So we're problem solvers, and when you're good at it, they give you more problems, don't they? And then finally, I talked about a little bit of the social do-gooders. We're the ones that buy recycled, purchase green, look at alternative fuels. And then we are the media skunks. The media is out to get us. There's no such thing as a good government story. And even when there is a good government story, you go down to the comments below. I call that Crazyville. You know, those are the shut-ins, you know, that are just sitting there typing on the computer. And even if a city employee on his lunch break ran into a burning building, saved a dog and a baby girl, there would be all this discussion about city pensions and how high they are, right? We don't do anything right as government employees. So our whole mission in life is to stay out of the news. Unlike the politicians, we never want to be in the news. So this is the life of a purchasing director that you may not know behind the scenes. So I'm going to talk about five areas. And I first want to say that all of you in this room know way more about fleet than I do. I would never even pretend to tell you about fleet. But what I do know is government purchasing. And I've been across the county, or across the nation, talking to cities and counties, looking at innovative ways and solutions where purchasing and fleet work together. So I'm going to share some strategic solutions as well as ideas just to plant some seeds and give you some conversation fodder to talk with about your own purchasing department. So area one, you know this, maintenance. The unpredictable raw material costs, it's hard to budget anymore. They want you to throw in a budget at the beginning of the fiscal year. You have no idea what rubber costs are going to be, steel costs, copper costs, any of the metal costs. It keeps going up and down. Warehousing is huge. Many of us we've upgraded our fleets. I've walked in some of those warehouses. They still have belts and filters and spark plugs for cars that aren't even made anymore, don't they? But God forbid you throw it away because it's part of inventory and we don't want to have to answer questions about missing inventory. I know, I'm there. I was over warehouses for a while. So we have huge obsolete rates in some old warehouses. We've got boxes with thick, thick dust on it. Or, on the other hand, we have mechanics that are doing the work of parts managers. Or things that you're paying a mechanic at this level, but because you have no staff, the mechanic's having to run around and shop for parts and make phone calls, or they're having to run do the other activities when that's not what you want your mechanics to be doing. And then finally, you've got your older systems, maintenance systems, computer systems, and all the new cars and then all the new gadgets are all requiring new technology, which was talked about earlier. So here's one city I wanted to brag about a little bit, innovative strategy. And they're not the only city that's done this. City of Boston, City of Chicago, huge labor there. My own city of San Diego has started doing this. And this is where you take that warehouse and you outsource the warehouse, not the people. I'm very respectful of keeping your people. I'm talking about the actual inventory part. City of Sacramento did this. They brought in a vendor to buy back their entire inventory. It was almost $1 million. So that inventory got off the books as far as the budget. Next, they only paid for parts as they were delivered. So if you ordered two fuel pumps, you got two fuel pumps, you got charged the day it's delivered. You're not having to stock 10 fuel pumps that are already on your budget. The mechanics no longer have to chase parts. They freed up the parts folks who were working the inventory and had them do some of those duties. So they took away 100% of the warehousing for the city. So you have no obsolescence now if you're not keeping any of the old stuff. You might think, well, we can't give all our business to one vendor. And I agree, as a purchasing agent, that would be a hard sell. But the deal is, while the one vendor manages the warehouse, you can get the parts from all the other vendors that you need. So if you have your regular car parts, but you need your heavy equipment, special order stuff, or you want to work with small business, disadvantaged business, veteran business, you have that parts person or that parts vendor figure that out for you. And here's the purchasing part, and this is how you sell part of this concept to purchasing. That last line, one PO. And you're probably thinking, what's the big deal about POs? There have been multiple studies done. The average purchase order, with all the people who are involved in that process, it can cost, depending on the size of the municipality, anywhere from $127 to $167. Every time you push the button to issue a PO, it's $127. $127. Things we don't think about. So if you're mail, if you're issuing POs, multiple POs and multiple payments for a lot of different parts providers, that's a lot of times $127. Or you issue one PO at the end of the month to one vendor who's still getting you all the suppliers you want. That's one innovative strategy that a lot of big cities are starting to take on. Second, fuel. And I know you know about fuel. It's your largest annual expense. In the recent Government Fleet magazine, they were talking about the city of Jacksonville just saved $2 million in this budget year just because the prices went down. Yay! That like never happens. Now, I'm in San Diego. San Diego always has the highest gas prices. You can go to Ducati and get cheaper gas than you can in San Diego. They tell us it's something about transmissions lines. I think it's about politics and taxes myself. But San Diego right now, I filled up my gas tank this morning going to the airport. It was $4.27. I know. For those of you all living in Florida and Texas, no fussing from you about your gas prices. So, but it is your largest annual expense. And then you've got all kinds of fuel. You've got your unleaded, you've got your diesel, you've got your alternative fuels. And then with the alternative fuels, there's different standards depending on what you're going and what you're going for and what the vehicle. A lot of times you can minimize your cost by buying bulk. And I know you know that. That's the Costco way of buying or the Sam's Club way of buying. But here's what you might think about. If you're a smaller city or county or agency, what about bundling with nearby cities, counties, and agencies? If you bundle your fuel together in a cooperative, you're creating your own cooperative contract, sometimes you can get some of the most advantageous pricing that is out there, because now the vendor, the oil company, doesn't just see you, they see 13 potential customers, and suddenly the pencils get sharpened. So County of Santa Clara just did this. They did, and they're one of the top five counties in California. They're where Silicon Valley, San Jose is, for those of you that don't know that area. So what we did when we went out with this contract, here's a couple of suggestions for you that we learned. When you're looking at the indexes, OPIS, a lot of times the vendors, the fuel companies, will want you to do a weekly average. Do not do the weekly average. It fluctuates too much within any given week. You want to choose daily over weekly. Second, there's a few cities that have done price protection. What that means is if it goes higher than they anticipated, they actually will get money back from the oil company. That's innovative. That's good negotiating. We did a reverse auction. What a reverse auction is, instead of the price going higher and higher, the price kept going lower and lower. And what happened, this was public. So the opening bid went up. The next gas company came in and put a lower price. The next one came in, and right up to the final minutes of that auction, we were still getting bids. Because we had consolidated the spend for the whole area. It wasn't just Santa Clara County. It was all the small cities, City of San Jose, Placer County Water District. Everybody else had jumped on board, so the oil company saw a big potential. They got better pricing than they did 5 years ago on their old contract. And now a lot of the other agencies are piggybacking off that contract to get that good pricing. If you haven't looked at your fuel, and I know you look at your fuel all the time, but if you haven't looked at your fuel contract and it's more than a couple of years old, it's time to pull it out and start doing something a little different. You can still go out to bid. You can still try one of these strategies. And if the price doesn't beat your old contract, you don't have to go forward. You can stick with your old contract. But at least you've tested the waters. You fished around a little bit and see if you could get a better deal. Third, your purchases. You know this, cars are supposed to be lighter, more fuel efficient, aerodynamic. They're supposed to drive themselves. They're doing it all now. I put the picture of that car because I think every fleet director should have a car like that, don't you? Be the perfect car. Oh, you want black. Okay, we've got an order right there. The other thing that I found with my city, remember Enron by the Sea? We had big dreams and no money. So they told me after the Witch Creek fires to go out, Tammy, and buy 18 new fire engines. okay, where's our budget? Oh, we don't have any money, but we want you to go out and buy 18 fire engines. So what I did when we put that out on the street is I had the companies bring financing with them. So it was a two-parter. Yeah, I want your fire engines, but let me see your financing package too. So we bought on time. If you have such an arrangement that can be done with your city charter, then I would actually encourage that with interest rates so low right now. Sometimes you can get a lot of vehicles all at once just by bringing the financing in. E-procurement. How many of you have a good e-procurement system? You like it. It works for you. All right. Four hands. Woo! We're going to town on this one. E-procurement will help you so much, but I know how it is. Remember, we're not essential. So finance gets the new big shiny system. And oh, there's a module for purchasing, and there's one for fleet, but we're going to roll it out later. Or when they roll it out, you're like, this doesn't look like anything purchasing can use. This is all around finance. That's because they were built for finance. Well, in the last few years, because of all the complaints and customer departments needing a solution, a lot of new companies have come out with module-based systems, meaning that if you already have a huge finance system, you can get the module that plugs in and still works with the financials of that already purchased system. So I would tell you, in that exhibit hall, there's a few e-procurement people in there, and I'm not endorsing any one particular vendor, but I would take a look at what they've got to offer. They've got really good solutions that are really affordable now. In the olden days, it took hundreds of thousands of dollars. You can get modules now for less than $10,000 or $15,000, depending on what you want. And then finally, cooperative purchasing. Now, co-ops have made a huge impact in the purchasing world in the last few years. Most purchasing folks know all about co-ops. Have they shared that with fleet? Do you know about cooperatives? All right. For those that have never heard of it or it's kind of new to them, cooperatives are actually where what I described Santa Clara County did. They set up a fuel cooperative. They coagulated together. They put a bid out on the street. They awarded it, and everybody uses that contract. Well, there are actually groups across the nation that's all they do is cooperative contracts. And a lot of times you can piggyback, that's what they call it, or use that contract. So if you're a little old city, but you want City of LA pricing, you can start shopping co-ops and find out if there's something out there that would give you better pricing than putting your own bid on the street. Purchasing will love you if you can research the co-ops that go with fleet. If you bring your purchase request, and oh, by the way, there's a co-op, so you don't have to go out to bid, oh my gosh, you could have brought me flowers. It wouldn't have been better than that. So if there's things you're shopping for, I would start looking at the co-ops and not just wait for purchasing to do it for you. Now, the other problem with co-ops is they proliferated. Is that a word? Like George Bush. Did I just make up a word there? There's a lot of them. So cooperative purchasing across the nation. And so now the complaint you'll hear from a lot of purchasing folks is there's too many. There's too many out there. I can't keep track. Here's my philosophy on cooperative purchasing. Think ice cream. Is there too many flavors of ice cream? Never. There's never too many flavors of ice cream. Yet, there's been an independent poll by the National Ice Cream Society, or whoever they are, what are the top three flavors across the nation? And they do a survey every year. What do you think has been the number one for the last 30 years, every year? Vanilla. Vanilla. I love vanilla. It's awesome. Number two keeps changing places. Last year was butter pecan. This year is Rocky Road. That's the way you look at co-ops, like ice cream. You research a few co-ops on what you buy and pick your favorite. That's your vanilla. That's your go-to co-op. But then you might want a couple of Rocky Roads, a mint green. You want something else to mix it up. So you don't need to search all 30 co-ops. Find your vanilla out there and then use it and show purchasing. Another way, and here's a secret, your purchasing person would not want me to tell you this, by the way, so here's a secret. If you have to buy something particular, and it's got the name, brand, and everything you want on it, that's another way you can go co-ops. because they've already identified the Ford F-150 white with this kind of toolbox on the back. That's the one you want. It's on a co-op. Go buy it. You don't have to do an open bid F-150 or equivalent, you know, and then all the other stuff or equivalent. And I did this for the U.S. Open. The U.S. Open came to San Diego. And it's at that time, its 102-year history, it had never been played on a municipal golf course. I don't know how many of you have seen Torrey Pines Golf Course. It's gorgeous. It's on the sand cliffs of San Diego, and literally the ocean is right there. Well, when the U.S. Open was coming to town, they anticipated it was going to bring $40 million to the economy in 4 days. And all the big guys were coming in for this tournament. So it was big money, big exposure for the city. So the mayor's office directed purchasing, give them anything they want. So I got the call that we needed to purchase only Toro equipment. Because the U.S. Open, that's their sponsor, Toro. And even though we were 2 years away from the U.S. Open, only Toro equipment could work on that golf course for the 2 years leading up to the U.S. Open. So I can't put a bid on the street that just says, bring your lawnmower. I had to buy Toro. So what did we do? We looked for a co-op that offered Toro. Piggybacked on the co-op, and then we just brought in Toro. So if you have an incident like that, co-ops could save the day, and you don't even have to do the bid process. Area 4, end of life. Now, purchasing handles everything, as Fleet does, from cradle to grave. And you know when the shiny new baby comes in, those new BMW motorcycles for the cops, or the shiny, shiny new trucks that come in with all the bells and whistles, or the new SWAT-mobile for the police. We love the babies. But when it comes to the grave, the old beat-up truck that's gotten in 3 accidents, nobody cares what happens to that poor old truck, even though it's given us 12 years of good service. And nobody really puts a lot of time or effort into that part of the process. We just want to get it out. Get it out of the shop. We don't want to look at it anymore. It was in the shop more often than not. So let's get rid of it. But you're missing a huge opportunity. Most of this falls into either purchasing or fleet. One of the two of us gets this responsibility. And if you're not using technology with this, not you particularly, but you having a company do this for you, you're missing a lot of revenue. If you have a company, and I'm not picking any company for you, but if you have a company take over, the one thing they do that we can't do as government employees is they market the heck out of your old junk. Somebody wants your old truck out there, but it might not be in your neighborhood. Maybe it's down the road a bit. If they're advertising with all of these buyers, your stuff is not only going to sell faster, you're going to get more money for it. They'll do a lot of pre-marketing efforts before the auction ever happens. And a lot of people will tell me, well, they charge a lot of different rates. This company charges 6%, but this charges 9%. So maybe I should just go with the 6%. The rates don't matter. What matters is the bottom line. If the 9%er is getting you higher prices and more money coming in, who cares you're paying them 9%? They're bringing more money to the table. And a way to test that is to do a pilot. Don't you love that word in government? Whenever we want to sneak something in, we do a pilot, don't we? And then we wait a year or two and people forgot it was a pilot, and now it's just part of the system. I know, I worked for government 20 years. I know how this works. So you could do a pilot. You can bring in 2 different vendors and say, I'm giving you 6 Crown Vics. You get 6 Crown Vics. May the best company win. And when they know they're going against one another, oh boy, howdy, are they marketing your stuff. We did that for the city of San Diego, brought in 2 different vendors, got the best pricing ever on my old Crown Vics. I think they were buying them themselves just to prove that they could bring in the dollars. But if you could do that, do it. Do your pilot. Once in a while, you'll have weird stuff come in. You know, the antiques? Well, they call them antiques now. My grandpa called it old stuff. But sometimes people really want that old stuff. They're collectors. There's whole television shows built just around this old stuff. If you have unique items, I would never let your auctioneer out on the stage in the back of your lot take that unique item. That's something you definitely want to call an auction company. I had to sell 4 police helicopters. We got enough money from the sale of those four police helicopters to pay for 1.5 of the new police helicopters because we set a reserve price. We would not sell them for less. So you are in control of this. You can set the reserve price and get some incoming money. And then here's another new idea. If you have stuff that one department, okay, everybody has the rich department, don't you? It's usually water, power, somebody with revenues. They're your rich department. You know who they are. They get all the good stuff. Who gets all the bad stuff? Library, park and rec, right? Poor little old general fund. They get the crap. So, but sometimes they want the crap. Park and Rec needs an old truck. They don't care that it's got a big dent in the side, but Public Works, they would never be seen in a truck in this condition. So sometimes you can have an internal intranet among your own employees and say, hey, Public Works doesn't want this truck anymore. How about you over in Park and Rec? You want an old beat up truck? And they may jump at it. And then finally, this is going to cause the most controversy of all. I want you to become best friends forever with purchasing. You can do it. You can dig deep and do it. And just think of this like high school. Let's take you back to high school. If we were in high school right now, you would be the jocks. You would know how to fix stuff. You'd be cool, way cooler than us because you have the nicest cars. I grew up in the 70s. You'd be in Firebirds and Camaros if you were in my high school. Purchasing? We're the nerds. We're the total nerds. We're running to the teacher to tell on you because you were speeding in the parking lot. We're crossing the T's, dotting the I's. But in any good movie about high school, you always notice the happy ending ones have the nerds and the jocks working together. So I'm going to challenge you a little bit to do that because purchasing should be on your team. When I started off my role as purchasing, I did not ask for that job. And anytime I'm in a purchasing conference and I speak across the country, I always ask the same question. Who in this room, when you were a little boy or a little girl, wanted to grow up and work in government purchasing? I've never had one hand raised. We purchasing folks, we get shoved into purchasing. We get pulled in, we fall in, it's the only job, we're getting laid off. You either get laid off or you go to purchasing. I'll go to purchasing. The way I got my job, the former purchasing director was fired on the front page of the Union Tribune with 9 other managers. The finance director, a very good friend of mine, called me up and says, Tammy, I want you to take over purchasing. Lisa, I don't know anything about purchasing. I don't even like purchasing. Tammy, I want you to take over purchasing. All right. On the condition, Lisa, that you will be my boss. No problem. I will be your direct supervisor. I get over to purchasing. I see what a mess it is. Lisa leaves the city and leaves me in purchasing. So when I first got to purchasing, I was going to fix that place. They are messed up, and I'm going to teach them a few things. Well, guess who got taught a few things? It was Tammy. There's a lot going on in purchasing, and you're not the only customer banging on our door. We've got a whole bunch of others that want stuff, too. But one of the first things I did was my buyers were too comfortable with their commodities. They had had their commodities for years, and they were comfortable. So I decided to mix it up. I made everybody give up half their commodities, move it to the next person, and you could still keep half for a little bit of normalcy. So the young lady that I gave fleet to, Beverly. Beverly is a straightforward woman. She tells you when she's unhappy. I told her, Beverly, you're going to give up these commodities, and I'm going to give you fleet. She did not want fleet. Those are old rednecks and big trucks out there. I'm not going out there. Beverly was a city girl, so I said, you are going to fleet. In fact, I've already called the director, told him about the change, and you're invited to the next staff meeting. So you're going to go and give a presentation about what purchasing can do for them. And by the way, don't wear that suit and heels. You're going to wear boots and jeans, and you're going to look like fleet when you go out there. So the afternoon that Beverly went out to fleet, I cleared my calendar because I knew when she came back, and Beverly's taller than me, I would not take Beverly on. I thought, I'm just going to let her scream and then continue to make her go to fleet. She came back late that afternoon, totally excited. The fleet director, John Alley, took her on a tour of fleet. He let her sit in a garbage truck, a fire engine, and the police SWAT mobile. She was in their meeting, and everybody had said, "We've never had anyone from purchasing attend one of our team meetings, ever. It was the first time." I saw Beverly last year at a CAPO conference. That's the purchasing equivalent of this conference. And I told that story with Beverly sitting in the back. I pointed her out. And she came up afterward, and she says, "I love Fleet, and I still have them." And I said, "I'm going to talk to your purchasing director, because it's about time you move commodities." So, it's the little things, guys. We are people. You are people. We can make this work. So if purchasing has not been to your all-team meeting, invite them regularly. They need to hear what's going on in your shop. The biggest complaint any purchasing person has is when you come to our door and you need it now. Now, you knew you needed it 6 months ago, but you didn't come till now. And oh, by the way, this is grant money, and it's going to expire in 2 weeks. Oh, yeah, you do that. You do that all the time. And if purchasing doesn't get this bid and awarded in the 2 weeks, purchasing lost the grant. Yeah, we love that one. So if they know, I know you use it all the time. I say that at a purchasing convention and everybody cheers. They know that one. Give your buyer a tour. These are city folks. They're downtown or they never get to come out to Fleet. Take them on a ride along. Take them in there. You will get their interest. They suddenly have a connection with what you're buying and what you're needing. If you can, if you have any dollars at all and you have a dedicated buyer, bring them to a conference like this. Let them hear more about your world. Because folks, if you start treating them like they're a member of your team, I guarantee they'll start acting like they're a member of your team. You won't just be a customer anymore. In fact, you're going to be our favorite customer. For many of you, the fiscal year starts next month in July. This is your first meeting with purchasing. You should sit down with purchasing and say, over the course of this year, we anticipate this is what we're going to need to spend and this is what we're going to need to do. How do you think we should organize this work? First of all, purchasing will be shocked because nobody does that. You will now become the most favorite department for purchasing because you're the only one that's going to plan ahead. When your request comes in, and when another department request comes in, my BFF is getting taken care of first. So work the system, guys. Work the system. So when you're looking at government success stories, I actually did some looking on Googling. And you will not find, if you type in business success or any kind of success strategies, government doesn't show up to page 6. Because we're not known for being strategic, are we? In fact, you know, government gets a pretty bad rap. But here's one story, and since we're in Colorado, and it's home of, in Colorado Springs, where the Air Force Academy is, I wanted to talk about this person right here, because it is possible to reform and change things. William Creech, he's a general, in 1974, he is given the duty of taking over Tactical Air Command. Now, in 1974, we're coming out of Vietnam, and half of the airplanes that in the equipment that he was over was not battle-ready. Half of the fleet that he inherited. He also inherited 115,000 personnel and a track record where every time a plane went up, for 100,000 miles, a plane crashed, meaning a $28 million aircraft was destroyed, a pilot was killed, life was lost, and the $1 million that went into training that pilot was lost. So he decided to study the system. And what he found in the Air Force is they took over the McNamara era from the 60s. When McNamara was brought in from John Kennedy's time frame, he was all about the process. So it was about cogs in place. How do we move vehicles? How do we move airplanes and get them fixed? And it was nothing about the people. The people element got removed. So when the general took over, he noticed that nobody really cared. The folks on the front line were your $15,000 to $16,000 a year privates. The chiefs, they were in the air conditioner office, and they weren't coming down to look at airplanes on Kirkland Air Force Base. You know how hot it gets on Kirkland? They earn that air conditioning. They're staying in there. So these kids were trying to fix these planes. If they had a flat tire on a plane, It took 232 data entries in two computers, 22 personnel to get the tire to where it needed to be. That's just a flat tire. So when he took over, he changed the whole philosophy. He instead looked at the people, and that's what's the most important thing here. He said, from now on, this group, you are a team, and these are your 18 airplanes. And this group is responsible for these 18 airplanes. So that group became responsible. Now, was there pushback? Yeah, there was pushback. Congress pushed back. Generals above him pushed back. The crew chiefs in the air conditioner offices pushed back. And he actually had to go to Congress over the course of 2 years to implement this pilot program. No pun intended, of course. So he finally got permission. So he set up two teams. This team had these aircraft. This team had this aircraft. He had to order the crew chiefs to get out of their office and get down on the front line. Well, what happened over time is the two teams started getting competitive. These guys had their own shirts. These guys had their own jackets, and they had team names. You know how on the airplanes they put the pilot's name? They started putting the mechanic's name, all the way down to that little private that was getting paid $15,000 a year. That was his airplane. Their names were on the side of that plane. And the whole transformation started. They started having better rates in breakdowns. They started having they had no crashes for those two teams at all during that pilot project. And what was happening was the team was taking pride in what they were doing. On Sundays, these young kids were coming in to buff those planes because they wanted them to be shiny. On their own time, they were buffing planes. When a pilot landed and coming in from a trip, the whole crew would be out there on the tarmac to salute their plane was landing, and they were there for it. The whole transformation was based on the work of the teams coming together. It took him 6.5 years to convince the upper brass that he should be able to do this for his whole TAC unit. And eventually they said yes. Based on the results of what he did, it's now not only across the Air Force, the Marines have jumped on board, the Navy and the Army are now duplicating the success. So if you think in your position where you are that you can't make significant change, I would challenge you that you can. Fleet, you got the biggest budget as far as spend in your organization. You're a whale. Nothing about your weight, okay? But you are a whale as far as customers. You can start pulling your weight, but you can also start pulling purchasing into your team and have them work with you more effectively. What we do as government employees, to me, is very, very important. I worked 20-plus years for the city of San Diego. I'm very proud of my service. Even though I didn't ever mention it sometimes at cocktail parties, I was very proud of what I did. And what you do is really, really important. When that cop comes home from his or her shift, that car you provided for them in good working order, it kept them safe. It got them home to their children and their family. That public works crew that just went out and fixed that sidewalk and made it smooth, I can tell you that blind person walking along that sidewalk, you might not think it's a big deal, but it's a big deal to them. When you have that heavy equipment go out and have to fix a water line so people have clean water, something we totally take for granted in this country, but others in other countries don't know about, that's you. That's all you. It might be public works out there in the trenches, but you're the ones that got them the heavy equipment. And I have to give you a personal thanks. My husband just passed away recently. He passed away during the holidays. And during his illness, he died from cancer. Many times I took him on a wheelchair. 225-pound man. And I'll tell you, sorry, I thought I wouldn't cry. I did really good in the hotel room. So that smooth sidewalk, I can tell you, I appreciated that. That crosswalk that was smooth and I wasn't having to jiggle him where he was hurting so bad. And when I had to call 911, excuse me, 2 or 3 times last year, and the cops showed up, and the EMTs, and the fire trucks. Yeah, I thank them, but I thank you too, because what you do matters, and I want you to be proud of what you do. So with that, I want you to go back to your agencies. I want you to grab your purchasing agent in a non-sexual harassment way, and I want them to become your new BFF, because for the next fiscal year, you are on the same team. Thank you very much.